Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, January 15th, 2017. This is episode 1355. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, I don't know, home theater. Let's see, digital photography. We can talk about, you know, smartphones, smartwatches, virtual reality headgear, augmented reality. Have you heard that? Or mixed reality? Have you heard that term? I'm getting more and more excited about it. I saw a really cool augmented reality visor for the iPhone yesterday. A company called Occipital is making them. They'll be out in a couple of months. And it's pretty neat. Right now, if you have an iPhone, you might feel a little bit left out because all the, you know, VR headsets designed for Android, like the Galaxy or the Samsung Gear VR. Those are for the Galaxy phones. And then the Google's got Cardboard, which is an inexpensive bit of cardboard you just slot an Android phone into and it works. And then now they have this new Daydream. And so I think people who are on iPhones probably say, I don't know, do you say this? What about us? Maybe not. It's so rare that iPhone people say, what about us? That probably don't even, that's not in the vocabulary. Well, you know, they'll come along. In fact, I'm pretty sure Apple has some plans along those lines. Tim Cook keeps saying, we're very interested in AR. So you're probably familiar with VR, virtual reality. The idea is you put these headsets on and you feel like you're in a 3D world because it's really, I mean, it's not that complicated. It's got two screens, one for the left eye, one for the right eye. They're arranged in such a way to give you stereoscopic vision. And then they have in the headset itself, they have sensors that sense head movement. So look to the left, the screens slide to the right, like you're looking left, and look right, and look up, and look down, and it gives you a feeling that you're in a world because you can look around in it. But it's if you've not used it, it's not quite there yet. For instance, in almost every case, you can't really interact with that world well. They some of these things have little mouse controls, like the Daydream. Some will use a game controller. Gear does that. And then if you have one of the expensive units, like the HTC has this Vive unit, it has little handheld wands. The PlayStation VR uses the PlayStation Move wand. Oculus just released its Touch. And that, you know, the idea is now, well, you can interact with the environment, but it's not like your hand is in the environment. You can feel anything. So it's just, it's a little bit limited. It's amazing if you do it. In fact, I've seen people kind of, you know, there's one game where you're on the edge of a skyscraper walking out on a little board. And I've seen people break a sweat going, well, I don't want to fall off. You can't fall off. You're standing on the ground. But it feels real. It fools the mind for a bit anyway. It actually fools the mind so much in some people that it makes them queasy. So that's not good. It's estimated about 1 in 10. I think it might be a little higher, maybe 1 in 5 people who use these things get nauseous after a while, nauseated after a while. They don't feel so good. And there's a bunch of theories why that is. So far, theories have proven wrong because they keep fixing it and it's still making people queasy. Then there's augmented reality, AR, which is a little different. Augmented reality, you still see the world around you. But, so you're looking around. You see, you know, there's a chair, there's a table. There's my buddy Louie, and it's all there. But superimposed on that is some virtual stuff, you know, monsters. A couple of advantages there. One is you don't get queasy or as queasy because you're kind of in the real world, so your eyes aren't as, like, your brain isn't like, what the heck? I think that's why you get queasy. That's the what the heck effect. What the heck? Your brain says that I eat something bad. I better throw it up. What the? But if you're seeing the world around you, and then a little monster in the world, that's not so what the hecky. It's a little what the heck. It's kind of cool. It doesn't have to be a monster. Microsoft's working on ways to use Windows with that. So you can, it's called Microsoft Windows Holographic. And it's going to be out any day now. It'll come along with the new version of Windows, which comes out this summer. And the idea is, you know, there's a menu floating there, and you reach up with your finger and you do a little Peter Pan gesture, bing, and the window opens up, and you can. I've seen demos of air traffic control where you're looking at a table and the airport and the airplanes in three-dimensional. You can walk around them. You can look at them or floating or sitting on that table. Minecraft, you could play. You could build a Minecraft thing on the table. And it looks like you're doing it in the living room. Some of the same issues, of course. Gestures are a little hard to use. And, you know, the HoloLens lets you use your hand or a physical mouse-like device. Anyway, this thing from Occipital did both. Really, one of the really cool, I really like this effect. You put your iPhone in it. It has a special lens that goes over the iPhone's camera so it can see the world. That's one thing you need with augmented reality, is a camera of some kind, right? And then it had a sensor above the headset that sensed the depth. That's important, too, if you're going to do augmented or virtual reality. You know, kind of where things are in space. There's a lot of computing power necessary for this, if you think about it, because if it's going to put something on a table, it has to kind of know where the table is at all times and recalculate what that thing looks like depending on your angle. It's heavy-duty processing. And we're only getting there now. I remember playing with virtual reality gear, it must have been 15 years ago in the early 90s. Oh, I'm sorry, that's 25 years ago. And it was connected to $1 million silicon graphics workstation in order to do this, you know, and you had a big hose coming out of the giant visor on your head just so you could get the data back and forth. It wasn't very practical and certainly way too expensive. But we've got it down now. It works kind of well with a phone that you already own. Wow. But the coolest demo with this Occipital thing is, so you're looking at the world, you can plop a little robot down there and interact with it, or chair, a table, and it's kind of weird. You wouldn't want to sit in the chair because it isn't really there, but it looks like it's there. And then there's a command. You tap the wall, and a hole opens up in the wall, and you can see through the hole, and there's a whole bookstore in there, and you can walk into the bookstore, and now you're in virtual reality. You're in a virtual bookstore that was through a hole in your wall. It's actually really cool. And you walk back out of it, and you're back into your living room. So I think we're getting – there's a few technologies like that where – I don't know. Do you remember the early days of video gaming where, you know, you played Pong? And it was like, well, that's kind of cool. Most of you are too young for that. But if you remember it, it was cool. But it's like, no, nobody's going to spend a lot of time doing this. Or the early days of cell phones, you know. Well, now nobody can afford it, but it's kind of cool. Or maybe even the iPhone celebrating its 10th anniversary this week of the announcement. Actually took them 6 months to get it out after they announced it. But 10 years ago, this week, Steve Jobs got up on stage, remember, announced the iPhone. And at the time, I mean, it was really cool, but it was very limited. They didn't even have an app store. But, it was very limited. It didn't even have 3G. It was like, it was very slow. We're kind of in that stage right now with a few technologies. And I just want to remind you that it didn't take that long before that kind of primitive iPhone became something amazing and changed the world. Or Pong became vivid reality games that you're sitting and watching on your giant TV and you're in there. That didn't take that long, a decade maybe. Augmented reality, virtual reality, I think we're at that stage, and maybe won't take 10 years. Maybe it'll only take five. Maybe it'll only take a few. I think it's moving fast. The other one that's moving very quickly, self-driving cars. Volvo announced at the International Detroit Auto International, it's kind of oddly called the North American International Auto Show in Detroit. It's going on right now. Just started today. That they are delivering the first fully self-driving vehicles to 100 customers in Gothenburg, Sweden. It's a limited trial because they have sensors in the roads and stuff. But again, you might say, well, you know, that's interesting, but that's not practical. We're at the early days of something that's going to change the world sooner than you think, I guess. And that's what we talk about on this show, is how our world is changing. And maybe do a little help along the way, help you get there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your call is next.
You're out.
Thank you, sir. Oregon Trail. There you go. Space Invaders. There you go. It was only 5 months and 20 days, says Fred Bloggs. Yeah, what, it came out in June, right? Hello, Gary. Gary is a early pioneer in virtual reality and augmented reality. I do tech in our chat room. And he's really excited. You saw, Gary, I do tech. You saw that occipital demo yesterday. That was very interesting. And the fact that you could do that with an iPhone, even an iPhone 6 or 6S, although they obviously recommend the fastest iPhone, is pretty impressive. Pretty amazing. Fred Block says, it was June 29th. That was exactly 5 months and 20 days. True. January 9th to June 29th. What we didn't know at the time when Steve was on stage was that there were only two or three of those iPhones, and they were very janky. They barely worked. If he made one misstep in the demo, it would have crashed. But he didn't. He made it look good. Yeah. Yeah. We're seeing space revolutions. The Falcon 9. It's an exciting world we live in. What, big reds? Bigger reds? Yeah, you can hear my clickety keyboard, can't you? This is a crazy keyboard. This is a coder's keyboard. It's nice, but it's too loud. But I really like it. No, I like how compact it is, too. It doesn't have a number key. But it has, you know, coder keys. It's really, really a nice keyboard. It lights up. No, this is not an Andy suggestion.
It lights up really nice.
It really does. Yeah.
Easy to see.
It's really easy to see. I think it's probably too noisy for here. But you know what? So what? They hear me typing. It's not so bad. I'm careful. Yeah. I don't bang on it. Yeah. You're returning the AirPods. Ah, well, Vic, that's an issue, right? It doesn't. It's one size fits all, and Lisa's the same way. I said, I'll get you some if you. So she tried my AirPods, and then she said, you know, they hurt my ear after a while because she has preternaturally tiny ear holes. Mm-hmm. We call it PTE or PTEH. Pteh. She's got pteh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Kim Schaffer is here. She is bouncing on her ball. I have to say that because anybody who's watching the video sees you bouncing and probably saying, what kind of chair is she sitting on? But both of us do that. We both sit on these exercise balls.
I can't sit still.
No, but that's why. That's the whole point, right?
Restless leg syndrome.
Yeah. And also, if you're sitting, we know sitting's not good for you. So
No. If
you have to sit for any length of time, it's nice to sit on something that makes you work a little bit.
And my watch says, get up, get up.
Your watch talks to you?
My Fitbit, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You haven't done your 250 steps this hour.
Yeah, I know. There's a new, I just saw a new exercise app that yells at you if you don't go to the gym.
Oh, yeah, I don't want that. Enough time yelling at her. Part
That's
of
why I got married. I have a wife.
Yeah.
So, you've been answering the calls for some time now, I see.
Yes.
Well, who should we start with here?
How about George in Santa Monica, who has a sassy Siri?
A sassy Siri?
Sassy Siri on his iPad.
Siri is pretty.
Yeah,
she's pretty sassy.
She's got a mind of her own.
She does, doesn't she?
Yes, she does.
Hi, George. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Kim.
Good morning, Leo. Yeah, I do have a sassy Siri. But I do, in the morning, I tell, or at night, I say, set my alarm for 8:30 a.m.
Yeah.
And then she comes on the screen and says, I've set your alarm for 8:30. Then 1 second later, she comes on again. I've set your alarm for 8:30 a.m.
Oh, dear.
Five or six times.
What?
Five or six times, and each one leaves a message on the screen. So I don't know if it has a problem, a glitch or something in her.
Yeah.
It's not hurting anything else.
No, but it's annoying.
It is, yeah. But in the morning, she calls me up, or she wakes me up once.
The way you activate her is by saying, hey, you know who? We'll call her Shlomo so as not to activate people's home versions.
I just push my button.
You push the button and you say, wake me up at 8:30 a.m. Let me see what happens here. Oh, now.
Set the alarm for 8:30 a.m.
By the way, mine's a guy because I set it to be a guy's voice.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't want to be sexist. You know, all the assistants all have ladies' voices.
Right.
Why is that? I don't know, but I think it's kind of crypto sexism because we don't want a guy telling us what to do. So it just set the alarm and just put it on the screen and that's it. It did it once. You're saying it'll say again and again and again up to five times and it'll put it on the screen up to five times. Same alarm?
Yeah, the same one. But it only wakes me up at 8:30.
So yeah, you know. So that's good. I don't know. I don't even know why that would happen. I've never heard of such a thing. I've never seen such a thing. And it definitely is a bug. One thing, okay, a couple of things I would try just to see. You know, I've noticed the iPhone needs to be rebooted more than other devices. Remember, computers used to have to be rebooted every day. Windows, you always had every day you should restart it because it's just going to break down if you don't. The iPhone's not that bad, but I don't think it's a operating system issue. I think it's kind of hardware and stuff. Anyway, remember that this switch that looks like an on-off switch just is a screen on-off switch. It doesn't actually turn the iPhone on or off. You have to press it and hold it. And then it'll say slide to turn off. And when you see that, go ahead and slide to turn off.
Oh, I do that every day.
You do? All right.
All the time, yeah. I do that. A lot of times, even before I said anything, I'll reboot it, get everything up to par.
Gosh darn it. You're way ahead of me. There's a hard reset you can do. I don't think it's any better than turning it off and on. But if you press and hold the home button and the screen on-off switch for a while, the screen will go black and then you'll see the white apple as it boots up again. That's a hard reset. And then there's something that is even more complicated, which is effectively wipe and restore. It's called the device firmware upgrade, or DFU. Now, before you do that, it's going to wipe everything. And this probably is what you'll need to do, is back up your phone. Okay, so connect it to a computer.
Okay.
And iTunes will launch and you just have it back up your phone. And then you're going to put your – in getting into this recovery mode is complicated. In fact, in general, what I recommend, because timing is critical on this, is that you watch one of the videos and follow along. Okay? So imore.com has a step-by-step video. And if you follow along, you get the timing right because the timing in the video is correct. So you're going to read through the instructions, which are many steps. I think it's an 8-step process, and then get the timing right. In the short version is you press and hold the on-off button on the right side for 3 seconds, press and hold the home button in the front of your device while still holding the on-off button, but you have to wait 3 seconds, right? So you press on-off for 3 seconds, then press and hold the home button, keep both buttons down for 10 seconds. If you see the Apple logo, start over. You've held them too long. Once after 10 seconds goes by, you let go of the on-off button, but keep holding the home button for 5 more seconds. If you see the plug into iTunes screen, you've held on too long. If the screen stays black, you've done it, my friend. You're in DFU mode.
Can I give you one more comment before you go?
Sure.
I'm on the second term lease of electric car. I love electric cars. I'll buy nothing else now for the rest of my life, which is going to end soon. But
well, don't say that.
I know, but my eyes are going back.
I know the feeling. Believe me.
So I'm going to always get electric car. I love electric cars.
I'm coming, Elizabeth. I'm coming. I'm with you. I bought a Tesla this summer. And I fell in love, and so much so that my wife, who drives an internal combustion engine, says her next car is going to be electric car. We got solar panels on the roof. It's just a good feeling. I love them.
Yeah, they're great.
They're low maintenance. They're easy on the environment, and they're just fun to drive, right? What kind do you have?
I have a Fiat 500.
Yeah, they're cute.
Yeah. They're actually excellent handling. Real short turn radius, park anywhere, almost two parking spots at a parking.
I know, they're basically a clown car.
Right.
If you wore a fez, they'd think you were a Shriner when you got out.
if you can, check out FF91 whenever you've got some time.
FF91,
a new electric car.
Good. Yeah, we're looking. Oh, that's the Faraday Future.
Right, right.
That's cool. Now, we saw that at CES, but I'm a little nervous. They haven't really put it into production yet. But they say we're going to beat Tesla. But I agree with you. This is the golden era right now. Electric cars. Remember that GM had an electric car and killed it years ago.
My friend had one. They took it away and crushed it.
I mean, it's horrible. And I really think that was more the oil industry putting pressure on them.
Yep.
But the good news is because electric is coming on strong, it's easy to find charging spots. It's not hard at all. And it's gotten to be pretty affordable. I think that this is the era of the electric car. And it's a good thing. And watch the oil industry kick and scream.
Right.
And there's certainly places that you need a gas vehicle. Like, you know, right. If you're in Nebraska, 20 miles from the nearest charger. But I agree with you. I love my electric car. So anyway, try the disc, the DFU, and see if that works, resetting the whole phone. I've never seen it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
So, wait a minute now. Mike Mann says, go into the clock app and turn off the other redundant alarms. No, but do you see what's happened? I don't know if that's related. He says that when he tells Shlomo to set an alarm, Shlomo just kind of gets in a loop and says it over and over again. I'm setting the alarm. I'm setting the alarm. I'm setting the alarm. I'm setting the alarm. So I don't, I'm not sure what that all means. Shlomo is, you know. And there ends up being one alarm, not all of them. So I have, yes, Siri Tourette's, somebody's saying. Low tech. I'm not sure what it is. No, Mike, man, he says Siri is, in fact, not adding multiple alarms. There is one alarm set. It's a weird bug. Oh, here's a discussion from Scooter X. Scooter X, to the rescue. I love that new microbus from Volkswagen. I saw that yesterday. Tim Sweeney showed us. Oh, look. How to stop Shlomo from repeating my alarm command 10 times. When I set an alarm using Shlomo, she repeats the alarm has been set between 7 and 10 times. This only happens with alarms. Any other commands? No, it does not set. It does set the alarm properly. How can I get her to stop? And then this from an Apple community specialist. I understand your phone. This sounds like a robot. I understand your phone is having an issue with Siri repeating the command when you set an alarm. I know how important it is to have a properly working iPhone, and I'm here to help. Bot. I would recommend restarting the phone, then test the issue again. Did that. If you're still having the problem, I would like to try to isolate the issue by having you restore your phone to factory settings. That's exactly what I said. We'd like for you to test the phone before restoring the backup. Restoring from the backup may face the same issue. It was a 10.2 update. Still doing it. Same problem. Others are reporting it happens. Having the same issue. Experience the same problem. Have this. Suddenly the Apple bot got quiet. No response. Ah. Say this. Wow. Siri, clear all alarms. Let's try it. Clear all alarms.
Are you sure you want to delete all your alarms?
Yes. Yes.
I deleted all your alarms.
Oh, my God. Now what?
How will you ever get up in the morning?
How will I ever get up? And then it says, nope, didn't work. Yep. then the guy who posted it said, yeah, it worked for a minute. Then it came back. Same issue, iPhone 4. Oh, my gosh. This is apparently not unusual, and there are no fixes yet. Let's keep going. Same issue. Apple support, device die, same exact problem. Wow. It occurs after the factory reset. It's a bug. Walked into an Apple store, tried it on a new phone. It does it there, too. What? Wait a minute. Set alarm for 8 a.m.
I've set an alarm for 8 a.m.
Huh. Hey, Siri, set an alarm for 8 a.m.
I changed your alarm to 8 a.m. tomorrow.
So, say add an alarm and then ask what time to set the alarm for, then say 8 a.m. and then you don't get the repeats. But that still doesn't fix the problem. Okay, no answer in that thread. So, interesting. Interesting. This is my response. Siri, go home. You're drunk.
Who, me?
Yeah, you. So, thanks to Scooter X, our chat mod in the chat room, he sent me to an Apple discussion thread. It's actually kind of funny. With the same exact problem. Guy asks Shlomo, we're calling, you know, S-I-R-I, Shlomo, so I don't want to set off your phones or anything, and says, Shlomo, set an alarm for 8 o'clock, and it she does 8 or 9 or 10 times. Apparently, there are a lot of people. Briefly, at the beginning of the thread, Apple responds and says, well, try exactly what I suggested, which is turning the phone off and on again, and if that doesn't work, try a firmware reset, a DFU, and that didn't work for any of the people in the thread. And then somebody said, if you ask Shlomo to clear all alarms, let's see, clear all alarms.
Are you sure you want to delete all your alarms?
Yeah. I am.
I don't get it, but I can check the web for. I am, if you like.
I hate you. I hate you, Siri. I hate you with a flame that burns like the sun. Anyway, this thread goes on and on. We'll put a link in our show notes at techguylabs.com. And no resolution. Somebody said, ask her to clear all alarms. That doesn't help. So this is not only is this not an unusual problem, it's apparently a common problem. And there doesn't seem to be a fix. There doesn't seem to be a fix. So, by the way, I did not know this. It's completely coincidental. But this is the 45th anniversary, or yesterday was, of Sanford and Son. So, that's a little spooky. 45 years ago today, Red Fox and DeMond Wilson. Wow. So, we don't know why Shlomo is so hyper responsive, and we don't know what the fix is. So I'm glad you called, and we'll see. Don't know. Wow, that's I'm glad we came up with that one. So Ellie's on the line from Honolulu. We talked to you yesterday, Ellie. Did I not get to your question?
You did, but I wanted to tell you about this app I have called Perk.
P-E-R-C?
P-E-R-K.
P-E-R-K.
You watch TV and you get points. You can go shopping and check in and get points. You can play games and get points.
What a world we live in. You don't have to actually do anything anymore. Just sit there and
right.
You'll get points.
Well, I got a Breville toaster oven absolutely
what?
Free from it.
That's like a $400 device. I love my Breville toaster oven. You got that for free by watching
for
TV?
Free. Yep.
That's a company that'll be out of business soon.
Well, because you can cash points for gift cards.
You know what? I actually
got an Amazon gift card and got the Breville oven.
That's
Pro.
Awesome. I like these because what it's making a little bit more fair. You know, of course, that if you watch an ad, somebody's making money. Why shouldn't it be you?
Right.
Right? It's a little bit, it's kind of making it more fair. And I've seen this before. There have been websites like this and so forth. Watch an ad, make some money. There's one that you would, my wife used to do this, where you'd raise money for charity. You could have the money go to charity. She had to go to the ASPCA, which was nice. So, yeah, that's kind of cool. If only
everybody do that.
Low-Tech in the chat room says, if only somehow we could harness this amazing power to bring peace to the world. Watch TV, bring peace to the world. You know, if everybody just sat and watched TV, maybe we would have peace. That would be, everybody relaxed, watching Sanford and Son. Not in the mood to fight. Just going to sit here, watch some more TV. That's great. So Perk, P-E-R-K.
Right.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Ellie.
Okay, thanks.
Take care. There's a program I use on Android. I mean, really, okay, understand that what we're doing is we're trading something for this. It could just simply be your attention, right? You watch the ad, a couple of cents, you know, goes to the person who's playing the ad, a couple of cents goes to you. That could be that. Or it could be they're collecting information about you, and you should be aware of that. You know, what TV shows you watch, that might be, that's valuable, isn't it? There's a program I use on Android called Google Opinion Rewards. It comes from Google, and it's a survey. And every once in a while, I'll get a little notification. We got a new survey for you. And it's usually stupid. It's like, did you eat it at White Castle Burgers today? And no. Okay, here's 20 cents in your account. And it's usually just a few questions. It's clear they're trying to gather information about me personally. But what happens is you get cash in your Google Play account and then you buy apps or music or TV shows or whatever, and it adds up. So I don't have a problem with these things because in a way this is the same transaction that's going on all the time as you surf the web, as you participate in various things on your phone. You're giving somebody your attention, your information, and they're making money off of it. Why shouldn't you get a little cut? Let's make it explicit. Seems fair, somehow. Jim in Tallahassee, Florida, you're next. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Afternoon, sir. I guess I should say morning, because it's still morning in California.
You know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, as Jimmy Buffett said.
I won't embarrass you by telling you how long I've been listening to you, but I used to have to go to my parents' house and watch you on satellite.
And this man is 45 years old. So there you go, folks. I've been doing this a long time. Yeah, we were on the early days of Tech TV. We were on the big C-band dishes. And that was our first audience was C-band users, which was great because, you know, those people were pretty techy.
Well, hopefully thank you. You can answer my question or at least point me in the right direction. My mother used to be a travel agent and used to take a lot of pictures on slides, and so I'm going to end up with copious scanned images when I finally get them sent off. But I've got some of them that I lent her my digital camera once, so I have some of them already digitized. But what I'm looking for is an app or a program, because I know the EXIF data, you know, you can have a lot of information. But is there an app or something? Because what I'd like to do is to put a brief description of each image, because I know part of the, you know, some of the digital images I've been looking at, you know, she's obviously on a tourist train somewhere in Europe.
Yeah.
It's a little green engine with rubber tires. And I'd like to be able to put this information that describes what the image is. So when I'm looking for a particular image, I won't have to go through all probably 50,000 or more images.
Yeah. So a couple of suggestions for you. I mean, this is absolutely valuable to do this. And professional photographers do this. Our friend Chris Marquardt, who will join us in about an hour, our photo guy, has a great video, which is, what is it called? Something like 1,000 photos in an hour. And the idea is categorize them as you take them. But obviously, these are slides. You couldn't do that. So you're going to do it as you scan them. And there are a number of EXIF editors. EXIF stands for Extended Information. It's stored in the data file. EXIF Pilot, for instance, from colorpilot.com is free and does that. I also recommend you use Google Photos because Google Photos does a lot of very accurate auto classification using machine intelligence. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're up.
Thank you. colorpilot.com/EXIF. This is a Windows program. I'll put the link in the chat room here real quickly. This does IPTC as well, which is the kind of, I think it's the Associated Press format. It's a journalist newspaper format that is even more elaborate stuff. And you can edit files, all the raw files. You can, this is really cool, and it's free. Windows, there are similar programs. And what you want is batch editing, if possible. So if she took 100 pictures of that train with the green wheels, you can select all of them, and then you can use this to edit them all at once. Now, the batch editing, they're smart, right? For free for onesie twosie. But as soon as you get to batch, $80, you got to pay more. I'll have to look. I'm sure there's other ones, and we could put those in the show notes. But there are lots of ways to do that. And that's a really good idea. And Chris Marquardt's so good in his suggestions that you do this as you take those pictures, and I haven't been doing it. And the more you do, the more useful it is. Because then you can quickly jump to that picture. But as I said, I love how Google Photos does it. So I put the Google. You can do it on your desktop. There's a Google Photos uploader app, and it's free for JPEGs. And so what you can do is search, you know, in Google Photos, you can search for terms, you know. So let's say I want pictures from, I don't know, Melk Abbey. We were there a year or two ago. We took pictures of the Melk Abbey. Let's see if it can find my pictures. Yeah. So that's pretty cool because I did not categorize those. Now, that's coming from the GPS info in the photo. But these are all the pictures I took at the Melk Abbey. So that is pretty nifty. And you get that for free just by using – and Google Photos is a great backup too. Now, why I got a picture of our cat, I don't know. The kittens are in there too. But so it's not perfect. But pretty good. Pretty good. Highly recommend using both, frankly. And if you do have, I don't know why I got that picture. If you do have EXIF information, I presume that Google Photos will use that as well. But let's see if I just search for cats. See if I get cat pictures. Yeah. You get a bunch of cat pictures. So I don't even have to tag anything cats. And that's not GPS, obviously. That's just comes from it. This is kind of wild, but it knows what a cat looks like, right? I mean, that's wild. So I'm going to do this with, let's see, dogs. Let's see if we can find Ozzy. Yeah. Yeah. Not just my dog, but dogs in a parade. I mean, wow. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? So I don't know why there's no dog in that one. So sometimes you get some errors. There's Ozzy's ears blowing in the wind. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, I have to say it's great and it's always wonderful if you can take the time to categorize your photos. You know, you can always put in information that is special to you, that you only would matter to you or that you know you'd want to search on. You could be a little obsessive compulsive about it and it could take a lot of time, but the doing a little categorization is great. But I cannot more highly recommend Google Photos. They have apps for iOS, Android, and your desktop computer. Windows or Mac or Chrome, I'm sure, that will upload images. So I have it running everywhere. Storage is free if you don't upload the original quality. But I have to say, they don't compress it that much. The quality is very good. And what's amazing is they're now using their machine intelligence. What I think they're doing is they want your photos. The reason they're giving them to you for free is they're training their machine intelligence to get better at recognition. I have 30 or 40,000 photos now on Google Photos. Doesn't cost me anything to store them there. And the searches are amazing. During the break, I searched for cats. And it found pictures that I had taken of cats. Dogs. Pictures of dogs. Not just my dog, but dogs in a parade that I had pictures I'd taken some time ago in a parade. It knows what a dog looks like and can find it. Now, there's some false positives. There's a couple of pictures that are there are no dogs in, but that's fine. Of course, it does well with geography, because you have GPS on your camera. But even if you don't have GPS on your camera, if that's, these are slides, you're scanning them in, you're not going to have any GPS data. It knows what the Eiffel Tower looks like. It can recognize a lot of geographic locations. So there is a considerable amount of auto classification being done right now by Google. And it works on all platforms. It's kind of mind-boggling. Apple is doing something similar with photos, probably for the same reason. I was talking at the beginning of the show about how technologies are in their infancy today that are going to be amazing in 5 and 10 years. And I neglected to mention the most important one, although if you talk about self-driving cars, that's kind of a version of it, and that's machine learning, artificial intelligence. We are entering the era of artificial intelligence now, and you're just seeing little strands of it, but this is starting to happen, and this Google thing is one of them. They're really kind of right now the leaders, at least commercially in a broad public way, of artificial intelligence. They prefer to call it machine learning. Artificial intelligence sounds like the Terminator, a robot from the future. It's not. It's not Skynet. It's just the ability of a computer, given enough images, enough training, and of course Google has literally billions of images to work with, to start to be able to classify those images in a way a human would do. But it's not doing it like a human. Don't worry. It's not thinking. It's just starting to, you know, it's as simple as, well, if this is the rough shape and it's doing this and there's a nose and two ears and a two, I think it's a dog. But the fact that it can tell a dog from a cat is pretty amazing. Because in general, a dog and a cat are very similar, right? Tail, four legs, eyes, nose, ears. But it's good enough to be able to distinguish the two. That tells you we are making massive progress. Massive progress in this. And remember, Google's been collecting these images for a while. Fred blogs in the chat room says, well, Eiffel Tower is easy, but 123 Main Street, Erie, Ohio, how do you do that? Well, remember, Google's also been collecting these Street View images for some time. It may be pretty good at some addresses. It might be better than you think. In fact, if you think about it, it's a lot easier for machine learning to say, oh, yeah, that's the Chrysler Building in New York City, or that's 123 Main Street, than it is to say that's a dog, a generic dog. That's much harder to do. There's some particular features of any building that are unique. You get enough geometry, you know, the windows are this far apart, the color is this, and you probably can be very specific. But when you're talking about dogs, they come in all shapes and sizes. The ability to say that's a dog, wow. I don't want to say scary, because scary, I think, anthropomorphizes it. You know that word? You know, it takes something that's not a human and treats it as if it is a human. It turns it into a human. And we do this with computers all the time, and it's inappropriate. It's not useful to say, oh, it's thinking. No, it's not thinking. It isn't a human. Don't anthropomorphize. These are machines, but they're machines that are very, very fast and have gotten very good at doing things that are human-like. I don't know if it does breeds of dogs. That would be easier than generic dogs, though, if you think about it, wouldn't it? I mean, when I do dogs, I see my dog, but I also see a statue of a dog. Yes. I see dogs of different breeds. Yes. There's a yellow lab. There's a corgi. There's a mutt right in the back of a car. Now, how does it know that that's a dog? It's not even the full body of the dog. It's a dog looking over its shoulder. How does it know that? Because it's, I don't know, it's magic. It does do some breeds, yes. But breeds, that isn't as amazing because, you know, a Burmese mountain dog, that's a pretty distinct look, right? A Papillon or a poodle, that's a distinct look. That would be easier than just dog. Somebody says, well, it does it by smell. Of course it does. That's it. It's obvious. Moving on to JC in Mississippi. Hi, JC.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Can't complain. I wanted to brag.
Good. Is it a humble brag?
No, actually, I'm bragging.
Good.
I'm saving $500 a year off my Comcast bill.
What? Now, that I want to know about.
All right. Now, here's the thing. Quick disclaimer. I am a Comcast reseller.
Okay. I don't want an ad here, but if this is something
no, I'm not adding.
Okay.
I'm just saying. That's how I figured all this out.
Okay, you knew.
No,
yeah.
Because
I have to, by the way, one thing that's very interesting about Comcast, and I'm sure you know this, is by one of the reasons Comcast has the customer service problems it does, is it's really built up of a bunch of different smaller cable systems that Comcast has acquired over the years, each of which has its own computer system, its own way of doing things, and they have really struggled with getting them all to work together. So that's why you can call a rep, and that rep doesn't know what an installer knows. Because they're working on different systems.
Their education consists of 2 weeks in a room
that
to
too.
How to answer a phone.
That too. That too.
So I have been looking and looking and looking and scouring, trying to find a product that I could put in my home without having to spend $1 billion to get some of the more advanced networking features. Number one is VPN. Number two is VLANing. And right before Christmas, I was walking through Walmart, and I found the Netgear router, the AC1750.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the back of it, and it says VPN support. It was $130. I'm like, sold. I need a new router anyway. So I didn't even know about anything else. I got this thing home, and I got a 2,700-square-foot house that is about 100 years old. So Wi-Fi stinks. So what I did is I put this thing in. I started exploring it. And come to find out, the VPN support also supports DDNS, which you can use for free as long as you have to make sure you go in every 30 days, click on the link,
right,
so that you can keep your DDNS active, or you can pay like $50 a year for it.
That's dynamic DNS. The reason is you need that is because your internet address changes from time to time, and so this adjusts so you can run a server. It sounds like you want to run a server.
Well, I've been running. I've actually called you before. I'm the tech support for about 42 different companies now.
Nice.
So what I had was five static IPs, which forces you to rent their equipment and everything like that. And I'm like paying $45 a month, $15 for the equipment, $25 for the static IPs plus taxes,
right,
to have this in my house.
Right.
And I was only ever using one static IP.
I know. I pay so for it too.
Yeah. So I was sitting here looking at this, and I'm like, well, if the router will handle the DDNS, all I got to do is port forward everything else, and I can make everything work the same way it was before and go back to my clients and change their settings on their end. So I went on ahead, and I set up the DDNS. I set up the VPN support, which you do have to read the instructions, but as long as you read the instructions, it works great. I literally put this router in on one end of my house. It works about three-quarters of the way, and then the Wi-Fi gets a little hinky.
We're going to run out of time here real quick, so do you want to hang on through the break?
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
I want to hear the end of the geek story. This is a geek story. And geek stories usually end, and it's been working now for 5 days. That's usually how they end, but I bet it's working more than that. We'll take a break, come back, find out what else JC did to cut his Comcast bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
Yeah, I have Comcast Business Class, JC, which means I have to use that horrible modem. And
Actually, you only have to use it if you have static IPs.
Well, and this is okay. So here, and we'll get back to your story. This is you and me on the podcast and off mm-hmm. the radio. This is the problem I have. I have one cable coming into the house, but I have two accounts. I have a business class account and a consumer account. And I don't know how it would know that this is the, if I, it says you can go out and buy, I can go out and buy a, you know, an Aeris cable modem and put it on the business account, and then I can do whatever I want. But I don't know how it would distinguish the business account from, I guess I'd have to call them with a MAC address.
Well, my first question would be, why have two pipelines into your house?
That's a long and horrible story. I went into, so I ordered the business class for obvious reasons. I wanted a static IP and I wanted an SLA. Although, ironically, it's 100 megabits down and I'm getting 240 now on DOCSIS 3 with the consumer class. But, you know, that's another story. So I go into the Comcast store because I found it much better to go to the store than to call somebody because, as you say, they're not trained there. And I said at the store, I want to get rid of my I'm nervous about this because I don't want you to disconnect the internet. I want to keep my business class and get rid of my consumer class. And they said it'll cost you more to do that than to keep the consumer class because you've got a package.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, but okay. On the other hand,
on the double play or?
Yeah, it's a double play, not a triple play. I don't have the phone service. I just have the TV and the internet.
Smart man.
However, I'm not unhappy with two networks because, you know, there's a lot of reasons why. Like my server is running on the business class. It's the house runs on the consumer class. I can test different routers. There's some advantages to that. So I'm biting the bullet and eating the $60 a month. But I don't know. It means I'm nervous about messing around with the business class modem. And I do have a static IP, although it's funny. I bought the static IP, and they never blasted the configuration down to the modem. So it never changed.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to argue with them a lot whenever they set up.
It's the worst.
When they set it up. And I have to tell them a lot. I said, look, whoever's on the other phone, I said, look, I'm going to save you a lot of time. Don't tell me to reboot the modem. I've already done it. I've already gone through all the troubleshooting steps. I have forgotten more about this than you will ever read out of your little
Please
notebook.
Please, just press that button.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, this is what I was looking at, okay? Now, I'm going back, and I'm actually going to do this for all of my clients and start saving all of them about $50 a month, too, because they're all paying for this one static IP simply so I can get into them. So what I've started doing, I've already done this for six of my 42 companies, and I've got to go back to all the others and do it for them. But I put them in a surfboard modem because most of them, as long as it's DOCSIS 3, that's all that matters. They try to trick you with all these up to seven times faster. You pay $100 for the modem. It's DOCSIS 3. There's not a huge difference.
I agree.
So I buy the $60 modems.
Yep.
Put it in. Put in this Netgear router, set up the VPN support, set up the DDNS, and now I can remote into them the exact same way. I just change the protocols from.
And most decent routers now will do DDNS. I noticed Netgear and D-Link and all these guys have their own DDD. I'm using a ASUS router, and they have their own DDNS built into the router now. Everybody does that. I think that's great.
A lot of people get confused, and where it breaks is always breaks 30 days later because people think
they have to renew it.
They think they have private. They have to renew it unless they pay for it.
For the free one,
But still, $50 a year is a heck of a lot cheaper than $500.
Now, the only issue is the terms of service issue, which, you know, I don't know if you care. They may not. One of the reasons they don't have us, you're not paying for a static IP address, so they don't want you serving. Right.
Oh, sure. And you can get around that by paying for your DDNS.
Well, it's a Comcast issue. Right? I don't think the other reason I keep the business class, even though it's slower, is because I can serve from that. I have a server running on it. And that's agreeable to them, but I think it'd be less than agreeable to them on the consumer version. On the other hand, I don't know if they
I have business class.
Yeah. You have to have business class to do this.
Business class my house because I couldn't. I kept busting the caps.
Yeah, no. I pay $18 a month for a dedicated static IP address. It's crazy.
Yeah. So, and I told Comcast. I said, look. I said, this is ridiculous. And not only that, but I had like three outages where their modem kept going.
Oh, I know. They're crap modems. They're horrible.
And they're like, we'll be out there in 2 days. I'm like, 2 days? I got a business to run here. I can't wait 2 days.
I guess so. I guess what I could do is I could call Comcast and say, look, I'm putting my own modem here in place of yours. Here's the MAC address. And they would then, that would then work, I guess. They would know and they'd say, okay, good. That's the business class MAC address. This is the consumer class MAC address.
Yes. All you do is you call them up. You're on the phone. The longest part is waiting on hold.
That's the only problem I have is The all you do is call them up in conjunction with Comcast is my worst nightmare.
Well, I've learned to just be. I used to be overly nice.
Just be direct with them.
Honey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm respectful. I'm like, look, trust me, I've done this 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Let's go through this. I'm going to save you a lot of time, save me a lot of time.
Yeah.
And make sure you send me a survey.
And I'll give you, that's the trick, because that's all they care about.
Yep. And I do that to them, and then I tell them. And we had one. I've only ever had one that was kind of hinky. It was really weird. We put this modem in, and it wouldn't activate. It wouldn't activate. It wouldn't activate. It wouldn't activate. And I finally got frustrated with the guy because he wouldn't listen, and I hung up. Well, about 3 minutes later, it started working, but only on one of the computers in the network. It would only work on one. Only one could surf the web. All the others kept going to what Comcast calls the wall garden.
Oh, God.
So I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I called up a buddy of mine who is 5 times smarter than I am, and he says, it didn't activate all the way. He says, I've seen this one other time. I said, okay. So I called up Comcast again, got somebody different, said, hey, could you just repush that configuration to my modem?
Yeah.
And they flipped the switch, and in about a minute and a half, suddenly the entire network started working.
Yeah.
I was like, thank you.
I wish they had a web page. I wish they had a web page where you could push that button.
Yeah, well, I asked them about that, and they're like, well, it's for the security of your account.
I
said, dude, please don't blow smoke up my skirt.
I know.
It's because you want to try to sell me something else.
Yeah, we want
the
upsell. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I agree with you. The phone service, we actually have 35 pizza parlors that we handle here in Mississippi, Tennessee, and Alabama. And we've done this.
Soup.
We're doing this for all of them. And we don't give any of them Comcast phone. We use a different phone service. And it works great with the Netgear router. So,
That's good to know.
I started pushing this stuff out because it saves the customer so much money, but it's also so easy to administrate.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculously easy. But when we get back here, Matt, I'll tell you something crazy. It does take a little bit of geekiness to do what I did.
Yeah, you know, it's too geeky for the show. So it's on the podcast. I'm going to summarize what you said, and we're going to move on because it's too geeky for the show. I think most of my mainstream audience is going, I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah, one thing I should mention.
Okay.
I took another Netgear router. I ran a physical wire halfway across my house through my attic. And set a second Netgear router as an access point. And I now have my Wi-Fi completely throughout the house.
Yeah, and that second router is a bridge, right? Yeah.
So, second router, you have one button inside the Netgear router that says access mode.
Yeah.
It's been less than 300
bucks. As long as it supports Wi-Fi. That's the way to do it. Yeah, that's a great way to do it. I've done the same thing.
Yeah, I tried the mesh network stuff, and I never could get any of that.
No,
I had the same problem you had. I had to go all the way back to the same room to work it.
Hey, I'll talk to you again soon. All right, JC, thank you.
Thanks, Leo.
Take care. No. Go get soup. Yeah. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. Yes, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up in half an hour. Smartphones, augmented reality, the changing world we live in. Phone number is 888-827-5536. 888-827-5536. I talked a little more with JC off the air, so I can summarize. It's kind of an advanced trick, but many routers now, you know, that's the thing. the problem is on this show, we have such a broad range of abilities, and I don't want to say something that's completely confusing to some people or dumb it down for the others. So I'll try to make this clear. But on your router, the thing you connect to your modem to get onto the internet, that's the thing that allows you to have multiple computers attached to your internet connection. In many cases, there's this feature, a free feature in many cases. Netgear does it. Asus does it. I believe D-Link does it, although of late we're not really recommending D-Link routers since they've got a lot of firmware issues. In fact, are they being sued now? I believe they are over all this. The routers have something called DDNS or dynamic DNS that allows you to run a server inside your network, and it will automatically change the address. See, already it's too complicated. We'll put it in the show notes. Or if you really want the details, we have it on the podcast. I kept JC on the line, and we'll put that on the podcast. Don't want to Don't want to get crazy. Problem is here, you know, we've all had to become network gurus. This stuff was all designed for businesses and workplaces and for a professional IT team to manage and run. And now all of a sudden we've got all these high-end networking devices in our house. We've got routers and switches, and it's, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy. And they expect you to just go, oh, yeah, fine. The worst part is, unfortunately, in order to make this stuff simple, a lot of companies have made it insecure. And that's really the thing that kind of worries me and bothers me. And, of course, that's the whole issue with this FTC lawsuit is that companies now with their routers, they're putting it on the box. It's secure. It's easy. It's, you know, you're safe. We're using encryption. FTC is charging the D-Link, put consumers' privacy at risk due to the inadequate security of its computer, routers, and cameras. And in the complaint, they directly address, you know, the claims. D-Link promoted the security of its routers on the company's website, which included materials headlined, quote, easy to secure, or, quote, advanced network security. But despite the claims made by D-Link, the FTC alleged the company failed to take steps to address well-known and easily preventable security flaws. Flaws they knew about, flaws they could have fixed, but just didn't. Now, right now, D-Link's under fire, but frankly, most companies that make these consumer brand, consumer grade, consumer priced routers are doing some variation of the same. Because these are, you know, if you're buying a $40 or $50 router, there's not a lot of money in this. A router is essentially a computer. It's got a CPU, a processor, it's got memory, it's got storage, it's got a operating system. It's $50 and you're plugging it in. And in theory, its firmware, the software, the operating system it's running, should be secure. And if it's not, should be updatable. And just let me ask you how many times you've updated the firmware on your router. Most people never. Worst thing is, even if you do update the firmware on your router regularly to make sure you patch it for security flaws, a lot of times these companies make so little money on this stuff that they just don't keep it up to date. They don't fix the problems. They move on. They expect you to buy a new router to fix the problem. They don't fix it on the old one. So while D-Link absolutely deserves the hot seat, don't think it's just D-Link. Asus, the router I use, and I really love the Asus router, has also had its problems and has been accused of not being quite up to date. I think they got a fairly hefty fine for not fixing some security issues. So I don't... It's tough, isn't it? It's tough. I don't know what to recommend. I do have high hopes for this new breed of routers that are the mesh routers from companies like Eero and Luma and Orbi. And Orbi maybe not because it's not technically a mesh router. But the newest breed of these routers are very expensive, but they do get patched automatically. So if you use an Eero, and disclaimer here, Eero has been a sponsor of my podcast, but I'll mention the Plume or the Lumas or these other ones. They are getting updates regularly and automatically. And that's kind of, I think, for any of these devices, we call them the Internet of Things. These devices that are small, dumb, but connected to the net, it's important that they also be automatically updated because you can't write perfect software. There's always flaws. And there's got to be a mechanism for the company to fix the flaws. And, hello, companies, you also have a responsibility to keep these flaws fixed. You know, last month, Netgear admitted to having routers that are vulnerable to remote attacks. They patched 5 out of the 11. So, you know, it just... I don't know who to point to. I've been using the Netgear Orbi, which I like a lot, but I don't, I mean, what's the guarantee they're going to keep that up to date? The Orbi, you have to, it's, it does not automatically update. You have to check the firmware and update it. And boy, if you think that's bad, if you've got light bulbs or cameras or refrigerators that are connecting to the internet, they're worse. They're not getting patched at all. The Internet of Things is a disaster for internet security. And this is something we know. Good news, though. Rudy Giuliani is now in charge of our cybersecurity. So did you see that? He's the new cybersecurity czar. President-elect Trump named him this week. And, of course, immediately hackers and security guys went to his website. I didn't know this. But Rudy Giuliani has a website, a security company. So his website that he runs, his company that he runs, which is Private Sector Security, is running out-of-date software, four-year-old software, with more than a dozen vulnerabilities. Its login page is public. It's the worst. The site fails to follow, according to Gizmodo, a number of basic practices that would be obvious to the most casual student of cybersecurity. And this is Giuliani Security and Safety. So I don't have high hopes for any of this getting better. So what's the solution? Well, we have to stay educated, and that's one of the things we do on this show. There's my phone making a lot of noise. You know what that is? That's my doorbell ringing at home. Perfect timing. By the way, that doorbell, another sponsor, I have to say, so a little disclaimer here, but that doorbell, the Ring video doorbell, does automatically push video updates. That's one of the reasons I chose it, or firmware updates, is because, in fact, they had a security flaw, which they fixed by automatically pushing a fix down to the doorbell. That's what you're looking for. What I was about to say is something a little more self-serving, which is you should listen to this show because we'll do our best. I'll do my best to educate you. And help you protect yourself from these flaws. And when there are flaws, we'll mention them. So you know you can fix it. 88, or ask Rudy to help. 8888, ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this.
You're out.
Yeah, Apple pushes firmware, but as far as we can tell, they're getting out of the business. And their stuff is pretty old, so... GiulianiSecurity.com is now down. What I really was wondering is how long is it going to be before somebody hacks that site? That's the irony of it. It's a security site that's running highly insecure software. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. If you want to talk about tech, in about 10 minutes, Chris Marquardt stops by to talk tech with us as well. He's going to talk digital photography. Ron is on the line from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Ron.
Hey, Leo. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, pretty good. Hey, my question one is about remote cameras for mother-in-law. But before that, I was just going to say product placement, I guess, for Epson.
Yeah?
The Fast 40, that 640 scanner.
Yeah?
Is unreal.
Isn't it great?
Yeah. I know you're...
they're a sponsor, disclaimer. Disclaimer, they're a sponsor. But, you know, I often am mentioning stuff like the Ring doorbell and this, that are the Eero, that are sponsors. But the reason is we only take sponsors for products that are good, that we use, that we like. So that's why there's sometimes. But I always will tell you if it's a sponsor, just so you can decide if you want to believe what
right.
I say or not.
But I'm just going to say I got it for Christmas and running through my.
Yeah, you must have a lot of prints that you never digitized.
Right, and they're fast. You need the horsepower on the back end, but it's fast.
Yeah.
But all right, going back to my other question is mother-in-law, she's 89 years old and independent.
Nice.
And you know, she's out and about raking leaves in the yard and things like that.
Yeah, you want to keep an eye on her. I know.
Keep an eye on her. Yeah, yeah, you call up and it's like she's not answering the phone. Has she fallen or whatever?
Right.
Do you recommend, or is there any kind of like remote cameras, you know, to put up and just say, like mother-in-law cam, you know, just to make sure that, you know, so you don't have to drive across town to check on her.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's all the security cameras that are out there support putting them on the internet so that you can check them. Not merely so that you can check on somebody else, but so that you can check your house if you're on vacation and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We had a the issue I would have to mention is, you know, this that may make your mother-in-law uncomfortable. So obviously, you want to make her understand that you can turn on those cameras at any time.
Right.
And so as long as she understands that, I interviewed a guy who had a product designed for monitoring seniors, kind of for the same thing. He said, we didn't put cameras in it. I'm going to find the name for you if I can. We didn't put cameras in it because of that issue. We wanted something that our elderly parents would use without feeling like we were patronizing them or snooping on them or like, oh, you're not going to take your meds. And so he had this really cool little hub that would monitor the refrigerator, that would monitor kind of a variety of things. And it's another way of knowing that mom's moving around. They had a little special pill minder that would signal when it was opened. So you could even know, is mom taking her meds in a timely way and that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. that I would recommend because it's a little less obtrusive. Mom would end up wearing a watch, though, a special watch. So that was one way to do it. But certainly any of the internet-connected cameras would do great. The Nest Cam is really cool. I think, what did they rebrand that to? I'm trying to remember now. I guess that's what it's called now is Nest. It used to be, and we've used a lot of these, a different name. Now it's expensive, but the idea is you set it up. It all it needs is power, so it doesn't need a power cable, and it will connect to her Wi-Fi. She has Wi-Fi?
Yeah, she's got Wi-Fi. Okay. Yeah.
So it'll connect to her Wi-Fi, and you can tune in anytime and see video. And you could put a few of them in. They're often used as security cameras. Now, these require power, and that means they can continuously record. There are a bunch of them that are battery only that just turn on when you request it or when they sense motion. So you'd have to decide, you know, what do I want? Do I want something that's recording at all times, or do I want some that only record when there's motion? The nice thing about the full-time recording, if you can plug it in, is that you can scrub back through it, right? And the Nests mm-hmm. really, really work well. They rebranded the Drop. They bought Dropcam. Nest, of course, is a Google company or an Alphabet company. They bought Dropcam, which we use all the time. We still use our Dropcams and have had very good results with them. And then they rebranded it Nest. So that's the Nest camera. Blink makes some battery-only cameras. Our sponsor, Ring, the people that make the doorbell, also make a wireless camera that can be solar-powered even.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of choices out there, but any security camera will do that, will do exactly that.
Okay.
You have the decision you have to make is how many wires you want to have, right?
Right.
If you it's easiest if you just stick it up and it's battery-powered, but then every once in a while you have to go and change the battery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it just records motion, that might be better because then you don't have so much to scrub through. You only see events where mom's moving through the area. You put one out in the backyard. You put one in the living room. I think there are a lot of ways. And, of course, there are services like Great Call designed for seniors to do this as well. So I'm not sure if I had any – if I picked just one, it's not the cheapest solution, but I really like the Nest Cams.
Okay. I'll check it out.
All right. I appreciate it. I think it's a good idea. I wanted to do that for my mom, but I had that same issue. I didn't want her to feel like I was spying on her. She spies on me because she can tune in the feed at any time. Hi, Mom. I think she's watching right now. But that's fine. There's a company or a camera called the Yi Cam that it's actually Huawei, the big Chinese company. And they make very inexpensive wireless security cameras, $35 wireless security cameras. So, and I know a number of people who have used those and love them and recommend them. So that would be one to look at. $35 on Amazon. 720p, which is probably enough. Wide angle lens. You want to look for infrared because then it'll work in the dark, and you'll see, you won't see, you know, super detail, but you'll know if your mom's up and about moving around. It uses Wi-Fi. Does not have a monthly subscription, and it does do streaming, which is, you know, the key. You're going to look for something that will stream. The Yi Cam is really mostly designed to record to an SD card. It's a more of a security camera, but it's very affordable, and I'm told very, very good camera. It looks, in fact, very much like the Nest Cam, and I wonder, sometimes you see these at a tenth the price, and it looks so similar. Mostly what I think is it's a Chinese manufacturer makes both of them, and then the company buys it, puts their label on it, and one hopes adds some value with better software or whatever to justify the bigger price. Lots of ways to do this. I could go on and on, but I won't. I'll just I'll leave it at that. But if you have an idea, here's what you can do. You can call 8888-ASK-LEO, get on the show and say, here's what I did for my 89-year-old mom, or go to our website. We put links there. There'll be lots of links there for all of these cameras at techguylabs.com. We also put audio and video of the show, and there's a comment section where if you have a suggestion, I would love it. It would be you'd be doing me a favor and everybody who listens to the show, even in years to come, if you put a comment with your recommendations. We do ask you to sign up for comments to avoid spam, but otherwise the site is free and open and easy to use. TechGuyLabs.com. Chris Marquardt right after this.
You're out.
Yi even has a PTZ for $50, which is kind of a mind-boggling price. And I know a number of people in the chat room have used these and like them. I should probably order some and just try them. It's Huawei, which is a pretty big, reliable company. I think these are not your like unbranded Chinese cameras that, frankly, have always had terrible security. But you know, we're just talking about internet security. That's a big issue. I think these would be probably the most affordable way to monitor mom. The PTZ camera is great because that means you can aim it from the app. I should just order a few of these, shouldn't I? Probably should. Anybody in the chat room use those? Christopher, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm great.
You have mail. We have an assignment review.
Assignment review time. All right, I'm going to try something new on the assignment review. I'm going to put you in a special...
Do I get my own box?
Box. Put you in a special
I always
box.
Yes, success. I always wanted my own box.
Yeah, and then I'm going to put in this box, I'm going to put the website. Yeah, there we go. Let's see. What folder does Chris go into? Are you a VIP? No.
Oh, I sure hope so.
You're a friend. You go in the friend folder.
Very granular distinctions here.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm telling you, I have to do so much filtering on my mail.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
And it works great. I use filter. So you're in a friend if you're in my contact list. And you're okay. The VIP is just, you know, a small group of people. And that I need to do that to separate it.
We haven't been on a photo tour together just yet.
You'll be a VIP someday.
I'll move up.
Someday.
Things to aspire to.
Yeah. Can I get this full screen? Okay. So let me try this.
By the way, my 2017 photo tours are now all sold out.
Oh, damn it.
In January.
Dag nabbit.
That's
good.
I completely misjudged that because I can't squeeze any new ones in there.
Well,
so
sold out. I presume you can make a living on sold out.
It does work, yes.
Yeah. So these are nice. These are pareidolia.
Pareidolia.
Oh, look at that pie. These are good. I like this.
Lots of stuff. Lots of wood grain, clouds, and cars and stuff. Some are kind of hard to see.
Shadow, that's good. I mean, it's kind of cheating. I don't know. What am I seeing? I don't know. There's a face in a log.
That is a clear, that's a good one.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know what you're seeing in that cloud, but you know, maybe you should just highlight it. Make a GIF. Look at that! A face in a pickle. It's also making me hungry. This is fun. This is a good assignment.
People had a lot of fun with
that
one.
It's a good assignment, yeah. All right, so there you go. I have your special I'm in a box shot. Mama, don't take my Kodachrome. Give me some Ektachrome instead. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ektachrome's back. We have to say that every week when Chris Marquardt joins us. He is our photo guy. Digital photography is his specialty, but of course, he has a very good book on film photography and does lobby to get people to just try a little film photography. He also joins us every week to talk about tips and tricks and superpowers. And this week, as we do every month, we're going to review the assignment. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Leo, before we do that, there's a rumor right now that Kodak might actually bring Kodachrome back.
No, that would be great.
Well, someone from Kodak has hinted that they are actually looking into what it would take to do that. So that's,
it must be that there is a burgeoning group of film photographers coming back. It's, you know, it's that nostalgia factor. Same people buy vinyl records probably, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, in the UK, I think last year they sold more vinyl records than CDs.
So there you go.
Well, now, CDs are going away.
Okay, I'm going to waste your time with a personal question. I have, you know, I got those two film cameras, got the Leica M3, one of the classic film cameras from the 50s. Yes. Both cameras are my age. That'll tell you something. And I got that Rolleiflex, which I really like, the 2.5D or whatever. But I left the film in there from the last time I used them, which is now going on almost a year. Should I take that film out? No, it's okay?
No problem.
It's not going to like...
You can finish up the film. It's a black and white film, right?
Yeah. It's not going to glue up the gears or anything. I don't want to hurt the hardware.
No. It's not like those pesky batteries that tend to leak after a while. No, film will just be fine. Color film will kind of change its colors over time. It's kind of miscoloration.
No, it's Tri-X. I'm shooting Kodak.
Oh, Tri-X. Yeah, leave it in.
You can leave it in for a decade. And it was fresh when I put it in.
I shot Tri-X that was 10 years after its date.
Wow.
And it still worked just fine.
I love that Leica, the feeling of shooting that. And these are so old, there are no batteries. I mean, it's all manual, you know, you're doing everything by hand, even the metering. Anyway, but enough of that. We had an assignment, which was
we have an assignment.
A funny word, pareidolia.
Well, faces in things. So
like if you see
clouds or wood grain or something.
The Virgin Mary and a piece of toast.
That would be pareidolia for sure.
That's pareidolia. If you look up at a cloud and you say, oh, look, there's my dog Ozzy in a cloud up there in doggy heaven, that would be pareidolia.
That would be pareidolia. Okay. But we called it faces in things because that makes it a bit easier to misspell.
As hard as this is, we got a significant number of submissions.
People were really on the search. They were really out there trying to find faces, and they did really well. And I've chosen three that we want to briefly look at. The first one is by Equation Lab. Title is Ooh.
And
Ooh. It's a face. I think, there it says a bus handrail coupler connector. So it's somewhere in the bus where a handrail ends. And it's this end piece, and that's attached with three sort of bolts, and it does look like a face. I mean, there are two eyes, there's a mouth, and if you see that every day, you're probably not going to see the face. But if you kind of separate it from the rest by getting close with your camera, then it really comes into view.
That's kind of neat,
and it's shot with an iPhone. You don't need a fancy camera.
What this illustrates is the psychology, human psychology, is that we see faces in everything, right?
We're pattern seekers. That's how we make sense of the world. We look at patterns. I mean, the reason you can look at any human being, at any face, and see that it's a human being, even though you haven't seen that person before, is because they follow a pattern. And the patterns are kind of what makes us recognize things around us. So we will see faces. The face is a very important pattern that we match very easily.
What else?
Second one.
Yes.
Alan Guido found a very happy USB plug.
See, now this makes me mad because everybody has this USB plug.
Let me look at the USB plug here. I mean,
they all look this way, don't they?
Most of them have. Now, some, yes, actually.
Yeah, they all have a face. Does. Yeah, every USB plug.
I have one here does exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Oh!
Beautiful.
Oh! That's awesome. All right. So, and this is a Christmas version of this.
That's a Christmas version in front of some, I think, Christmas wrapping paper or something.
Funny.
The third one is, okay, let's not talk about the title of that photo because it's WP_2015 something.
Oh.
But Bob, okay, so what are we looking at? You know these binocular things at tourist locations that you that take coins?
Yeah,
and
this one's in Seattle because I see the Space Needle in the distance. So
and there is some water around and it's cold, it's freezing, so it's frozen over. These things often look like faces, especially if when they're stereoscopic, when they have two holes look through. But this one is frozen over, and that makes it into not just a different kind of face, but into a very organic kind of face.
Yeah.
You have the eyes, you have the eyebrows, you have a wrinkled face, you have a smiling mouth, you have a nose, you have ears. I mean, this is just... And what I love about this, in addition to that, is that it's more on the monochrome side, so you don't see many colors. I don't think that Bob actually took the colors out. I think he left them in, but just the weather, the gray sky, and no really colorful things in the photo, that together just makes for a very monochrome photo.
Yeah.
The other thing I like is he left some context in there. He didn't just get close to that face, but he put it to the side, and he still has a lot of other things, so you can see where it is, and you have some context that it's somewhere where there's water. And the face is still the most important thing in the picture because it's in the foreground, because it's sharp, because it's big. But the context is there, and
I love this picture.
That's my winner. That's my personal winner.
Because the telescope by itself, you know, these little binoculars look like they have a face anytime.
Exactly.
But the choice of making the snow on it, the ice on it, and I agree, the composition of the picture, the Space Needle in the background, all of this makes it a really great shot.
Really well done.
Really, really fun. Well, that was fun. I didn't know we'd get it. I thought it would be too hard. Pareidolia. If you go to our Flickr group, there's a group. Flickr.com is Yahoo's photo sharing site, and there's a group in there called the Tech Guy Group. You'll know, it's a picture of me in it, and there's like 10,000 members. Don't join one with 3 members. That's probably not the real one. Join one with 10,000 members or more. And you can see these. You can do a slideshow because the hashtag is what? Faces and Things?
It's Faces and Things, yeah.
Yeah. So just do the hashtag Faces and Things and you can see all of the submissions. Nice job for everyone. Now, really the only reason we do this is it's an excuse to go out and take pictures, to use your eye. And this was fun because you really had to look at the world around you. Let's do another one.
Okay, next one. I actually looked up words that have a lot of meanings. So to make it kind of to give people
more
a good reason to bring back
right?
a lot of variety.
Yeah.
It's a very simple word, but I looked it up. I think it has over 50 different meanings.
Good.
It's the simple word break.
B-R-E-A-K.
Break. B-R-E-A-K.
Okay. So
that can be
that's
so
as open as
ways.
You could get. So again,
it's pretty much why this whole thing that
break.
I've ever done here.
Break. Okay. Well, I just got my new lens for my Canon 5D, and I'm ready to go out and shoot. I got to shoot pictures. I need some stimulus. This is it. Leo's going to find and you should do the same every week, another picture illustrating the word, the concept, the idea, one of the 50 meanings of the word break. And what you do is you put that word in the tag, upload it to Flickr, put it in the tag, and then submit it to the Tech Guy Group. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will thank you. We'll welcome you if you're not already a member. And then we'll add it to the pool. And in a month, Chris will go on the air and do something no radio show has ever done before, describe photographs on the radio. You'll find more of Chris Marquardt. I love it. I don't care. It's an excuse to take pictures. That's what it's all about. You'll find more of Chris Marquardt, his work, his book, wonderful book about film photography, and, of course, his workshops, too. We're now going into 2018 because he's sold out for the year already. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. And we'll see you next week.
See you.
Thanks, Chris. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Yeah, I got the 24-105. That's, to me, the perfect kit lens. And people,
it is, and the Mark II. The Mark II. I want to get my hands on that one day. Yeah.
Yeah. The Mark. I have a Mark IV.
So. No. The lens. The 24-105.
Oh, yes, the new one. It's the new one.
That's the new one. Yes.
And people are saying very good things about it. Yeah. So, and it's you know, it's a big lens, but of so course. It's a big camera. The whole thing, I'm gonna have a hump.
But if you go on vacation, that's the only lens.
Well, that's the thing. I could get away with just that lens, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And
very good.
I will go out and take some M3 pictures of my Tri-X.
Yeah, keep working on, keep using that.
I was afraid to open it up because I thought, oh, I've gummed it all up. No, I keep it in a leather case. I have a camera rack that's sealed, glass enclosed.
You know, there are people who go to flea markets to find old cameras that have film in them.
Oh.
And then they will find old cameras that have had film in them, exposed film that was 20, 30, 40 years old. And then they develop that, and then they look at other people's pictures.
That's a little snoopy.
Well, it's usually long gone things. So there's a whole scene of people who do that. So
what is that scene film called? I know why. They're looking for more of the the street photographer.
They're looking for street photography. I mean, Vivian Maier kind of stuff. They're looking for stories. They're looking for. They're not creepy. I mean, this is kind of a black and white film, 50 years old, you can still develop that and you can still get something out of that.
Did you see that story in the Times about the guy? He'd left Nazi Germany right before Kristallnacht, came to the United States, became a furrier, and was a fanatic shooting film.
I haven't seen that.
Not stills, but movies. And his when he passed away, or actually when he moved, His kids found these shopping bags full of reels of film. And one of them is of Marilyn Monroe in New York City, mostly as a publicity stunt, I think, for 7 Year Itch. You know, this famous scene where she's on the subway grate and her skirt blows up.
Sure.
They ended up shooting it on in the soundstage later, but they briefly shot it in New York City to kind of promote it.
And he filmed it.
Filmed it, and his son found the film. His dad had always talked about this, and nobody believed it. His dad said, oh, yeah, I made a video. There's Billy Wilder walking through it. Apparently, his dad was right behind the camera with his, mechanical camera, and it was 1960 or something. So
I'm looking at the article. That must be worth a lot now, that footage.
It's amazing that this exists.
Wow,
it's found footage because it was sitting in a shopping bag for 50 years.
So you see, film has a good way to survive long time.
Isn't that amazing?
Longer than your digital photos will.
I want to see the full thing. This is just a 12-second clip from it. I'd like to see.
All right.
More. Yeah, it's a good article. New York Times, the Sunday Times.
Very cool.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Leo. Talk to you again in a week.
Congratulations on selling out. I think that's a good thing, right?
Well, it looks good. I just know that I could have sold more. So, yeah.
Well, you keep them pretty small. I mean, I think that's a great thing, but that's the limit, I guess. Yeah. You don't want
to. No, 28 in, there will be more tours.
Are you doing something every, weekend? Your book, you couldn't do more?
It's for one reason, it's too late because people need time to decide.
Yeah.
I have workshops going on here locally, so I'll just keep in busy. Yeah.
Good man. Proud of you, Chris.
Thank you.
You deserve the success. Thank you. Take care.
Talk to you again next week.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 88. Ask Leo. Jeff, Pennsylvania, you're next. Hi, Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
I have a question about an Android phone. I have a unlocked Asus Zenfone 2 phone I bought about a year and a half ago, probably. Mm-hmm. I'm on a track phone service, and it's a GSM phone, and I live in rural Pennsylvania, and it seems like where I'm at, where I live, it's serviced by a voice-only tower with no data.
Okay.
And the thing of it is, like, I could get, like, 200 yards or so away from my house, and I'll still have a data signal and a voice signal. But as soon as I cross that 200-yard barrier, it'll go to voice-only.
Ah.
And I can't receive calls, and I can't make calls, even though I have a voice signal. And when I leave my house and I go the opposite direction, it seems to stay locked on that voice tower, even though I go past that, like, 200-yard barrier.
How do you know that you're not getting that you're getting voice but not data? How are you checking that?
Well, it only gives me the voice bars.
You see bars, but you're not able to make a voice call.
Right.
Yeah.
And I...
It could be the bars are lying.
No, they're not. Because I bought a cheap track phone, and I transferred my number over. It was a cheap Alcatel phone for like $10.
Yeah.
And
it worked.
And it worked with the bars.
Yeah.
You know, it has the same amount of bars as my Asus smartphone.
Interesting.
And it's I can't get any answers from...
Who's the carrier?
It's track
phone.
It's a GSM phone, so yeah. They're probably using AT&T.
See, that's part of the issue is the deals track phone has made with its, you know, it's a MVNO, mobile virtual network operator, resells connectivity from other guys.
Right.
But I'm sure it's made deals with the carriers that may preclude it from using certain towers. I'm just guessing at this point. I don't know why you're getting this odd behavior. It's interesting. The Alcatel works, whereas the Asus does not.
Right. And like I said, it's not the Alcatel. It's just a
It's cheap.
Junk,
but it may have better, believe it or not, it may have a better antenna than the Asus.
But one other thing, though, I did. I went and got I think it was an Honor smartphone.
Yeah, the Huawei, yeah.
Yeah, and I put the SIM in that, and that behaves exactly the same way as the Asus. Because I thought it was something to do with the Asus phone, because I was just pulling at straws.
There are a couple things to know. One is that data is carried on, obviously, different frequencies than voice. And it may be that the Alcatel had a radio that could receive data from a tower. They're different frequencies, different capabilities. And it may be that the capabilities of the Alcatel were actually superior to those of the two smartphones you tried and not using those frequencies. Now, the other question is LTE. The Alcatel does not have LTE, no doubt.
No, I think it was just
data and maybe 2G or 3G.
Yeah, it was probably 2G.
Voicing 2G, yeah.
Like when I get the icon on the old the cheap Alcatel phone, it would actually just say VO for voice only.
Yeah. So it doesn't do data at all. So you can't compare the bars because they're measuring different things. For instance, I'm being told by Ed in the chat room that AT&T stopped measuring 3G signal and replaced those with LTE. So the bars you're seeing represent LTE signal only. I am not an expert on how these companies handle representing connectivity. One thing you could do that might be interesting, there's a secret, on almost all phones, there's a secret menu that's used, it's intended really only for, the techs.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually involves a long, strange sequence like star plus 3294, star plus that kind of a sequence that you do to dial it as if it's a phone number. And it'll put you in this testing menu. And the diagnostic menu is much more useful than the bars. The bars are almost useless. But the diagnostic menu will tell you what frequencies you're getting and what signal you're getting on each frequency. So what I would do is Google diagnostic menu for the different phones. It's often the same, sometimes different. So, I mean, I could give you one, but I don't want people also to randomly start typing this into the phone.
Right.
So I won't give it out on the air. But you'll be able to quickly find it if you Google diagnostic menu and Asus phone, for instance.
Okay.
And then try that on all three of the phones.
Well, I only have the Asus.
You gave up the other one. Well, try that on the Asus, and then it'll tell you something. There are apps as well. I use Signal Spy, but there's one called Gmon that will also give you some of that diagnostic menu information. The bars themselves are really... I mean, I remember when Apple rewrote the firmware on the iPhone 4S, because remember that was the antenna phone that, if you held it funny, would attenuate the signal. So they just changed the representation of bars on the phone. They didn't fix it.
One weird thing that happens, like I said, when I leave my house and I, you know, drive past that like 200-yard barrier, it stays locked on that voice antenna for like 7 miles. But if I go in and do a, you know, go into airplane mode and come back in it, or get off of airplane mode, it'll find that data tower. I'll get a data signal and bars for the voice.
That's weird too.
It's like not switching like it should.
That's really weird.
And it did it, like I said, on this Asus and that other Honor phone I had for a little while, which I don't have anymore.
Wow.
So this is totally puzzling, and I have, you know.
Well, here's the deal. I don't know, but you're talking to quite a few very smart people, some of whom are probably engineers for carriers. And, you know, I don't know if it's the phone, if it's track phone, if it's AT&T or T-Mobile, whoever owns those towers, or some interaction of the above. It could well be the track phone is, you know, not handling the handoff correctly, or that the Asus is, and I just don't know. My bet is because you're using an MVNO, their relationship with whoever owns that tower is different than it would be if you were using an AT&T phone.
Yeah,
that'd be my guess, but it's just a guess. Somebody listening will know and will call in or put it in the show notes.
Okay, well, I'll keep checking.
Keep listening, Jeff. Yeah.
Because that's
weird.
My mind that the cheap Alcatel works.
Well, it works. It's voice is the issue for you, right? You want the voice to work.
Yeah, I'd like to be able to receive voice calls and make voice calls from my home, right. But I can't.
Here's another thought, and this has caused a lot of confusion and problems. Many of the high-end carriers have switched to voice over LTE or VoLTE. And they're no longer using those different voice frequencies for voice. They're using voice as data only. And a smartphone is much more likely to want to do that than a dumb phone. The Alcatel isn't capable of VoLTE.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
So it may be using the old voice frequencies and handling that well, whereas the Asus is getting, you know, confused by the shifting tides of LTE on your towers. You probably don't have LTE out there, or if you do, you don't have VoLTE.
Oh, okay.
So there's so many. In other words, I can think of a lot of scenarios, but I'm not sure which of them is relevant. Somebody'll know.
Yeah, that's better explanation than I got from anybody else.
Yeah, that's changed. You know, this move to LTE is a very positive thing. It's kind of embracing the future, but it's similar to the move television stations made from digital, from analog to digital.
Right.
We're going from the old voice frequencies to these new digital frequencies, and that's changed things a lot. OpenSignal.com has Android and iOS apps that have will tell you information. There is a diagnostic menu. I'm looking right now. There is a diagnostic menu for the Zen phone. Actually, there's some really interesting diagnostic menus, including one that comes from the calculator. You enter in the calculator .12345 plus equals, and you'll get a test screen. But that's not the one you want. You want the diagnostic menu, and I'm hesitant to give that out. I don't want to confuse people. You can find this. I just searched for it, and then it came up pretty quickly.
Okay.
That'll give you at least get some numbers, you know. They measure signal strength in dB, a negative dB. So you'll start to see some numbers. And a little bit of Googling will kind of give you some idea of what numbers you should expect, what you're getting, whether the phone will work with those numbers, et cetera, et cetera. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Another hour to come. Stay here. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. You know, the stuff with chips in it. The stuff with chips in it. Technology. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you are in the U.S. or Canada, that's a toll-free number. But good news, because it's a toll-free number, it should be a toll-free Skype call for you as well. So from anywhere in the world. I love getting calls from all around the world. It's so fun. 888-827-5536. I will mention the website, techguylabs.com. That's a free website we set up. It has the contents of the show, both in written form and audio and video after the fact. So it's a place you can go if I mention something, if there's a link, if you want to know more. It's there. You can add comments. And we don't charge. We don't ask you to sign up or anything. The only thing we do, if you want to leave a comment, we make you register with Google or Facebook. You know, it's easy to do. You press a button. And the only reason is to reduce spammers. You know, we monitor it very carefully. But this is a big problem on the internet. In fact, comments in general are a big problem on the internet. And we don't want to fill it up with ads for Viagra and stuff. So we keep an eye on that and do ask you to sign up for that. TechGuyLabs.com. Otherwise, to browse, free. It's got a great search engine. It's all there. Somebody in the chat room asked me a good question. Why have I recommended Lenovo lately? Uncle Bick says, I'm not calling you out. Just curious. You used to be so against Lenovo about the Superfish thing, and lately I've heard you recommend them. Yeah, I think Lenovo learned their lesson. Lenovo twice, not once, but twice, put ad it was malware on their consumer grade system. Superfish was the worst one, because not only because it was to make money for Lenovo by inserting ads into your surfing, which is by itself terrible, but it was so poorly designed it actually was a security flaw that opened up your system to bad guys. Lenovo got caught red-handed. They were embarrassed. They removed it. Then they did something similar again. The problem is they make excellent laptops, and at the higher end anyway, it's hard for me not to recommend the ThinkPads. Their ThinkPads, by the way, are not designed in China, but Lenovo is a Chinese company, but they're still designed in the States by the same engineers who worked for IBM when IBM owned that brand. It's an IBM brand, and they've really kept that brand pretty pristine. In fact, their latest Lenovo ThinkPad Carbon X1. And I'm very interested in the yoga version of that, which is a bendy. You know, you can have it do downward dog or is that Warrior 2? Anyway, you can have it flex and stuff. Both of those ThinkPads are what Microsoft calls signature editions. And this is what I really recommend. In fact, it's funny because Microsoft has always made signature editions of their hardware, and they feature signature editions from other manufacturers in the Microsoft store, but so few manufacturers do that. The signature edition has no junkware on it at all. It is pure Windows. And I like that. I'll tell you what, companies, listen to me. I'll pay an extra $50 not to have the trialware. You know, that's why they put it on there. They make money. And the signature editions generally are not more expensive, but so when Lenovo says this is a signature edition, Microsoft has to sign off on it, and that means there's nothing on there. It's clean. It's pure Windows. And I think that to me is Lenovo saying, yeah, we understand. We blew it, and we've got to earn your trust back. They still make great hardware, and if you're buying a ThinkPad from Lenovo, and those are the ones I recommend, and especially if you're getting the signature edition versions, I think they're certainly worth recommending. So I don't want to punish them particularly by just saying, I'm never going to recommend them again. I kind of did say that because I was very angry at the way they treated it. But we got to be open to give them another chance. And they're doing all the right things. So that's why, Uncle Bick. Yeah, I love the keyboards. And by the way, it's getting harder and harder to find a good keyboard. I was playing with my old Dell XPS from 2013, and I had bought a replacement for it last year, and I realized I really missed that 2013 keyboard was a better keyboard. Same thing with the MacBooks. They've made the keyboards worse, not better. So keyboard is one of those very personal things. I think companies think as we get thinner, people don't demand as much from a keyboard, we can get away with making keyboards that are not as good as the old clickety-clack keyboards. But I like clickety-clack. I do. Give me clickety clack. Gloria, North Hollywood, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, Leo. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
A couple couple of weeks ago, listening to you, I heard you mention something about if you go to a cheap place to have your computer or laptop fixed. A friend of mine went to Staples. Sometimes people go to Home Depot. They wipe the computer clean.
Generally, not even the cheap places. Most places.
And then you lose the new programs, especially programs you paid for outside of the...
And they should warn you about that. And certainly, my advice always is before you bring a computer in or send it in, back up the hard drive.
Oh.
And well, you didn't, did you?
Apparently, no. This person did not. They have to buy it again.
They should tell you to do that. They should be very clear when you bring it in for service. Maybe they forgot, but they should say, hey, we can't guarantee the contents of your drive will be intact when we're done.
Right.
One of the reasons they do that is they can't test the computer to see if the hardware is working if it's not in a known state. And the best way to get it in a known state is to wipe the drive and put Windows on there.
Oh, I thought they were just being cheap.
No, it has nothing to do with cheapness. It has to do with just their system, you know, how they do it. In a way, that's a good thing. You know, I don't know if you saw this. There's a kind of a brouhaha. Best Buy's Geek Squad also does this. But it turns out the Geek Squad has been turning people in. If they see a child porn or some other illegal activities on your hard drive, they'll turn you in, all of which they have an obligation to do, by the way. Mm-hmm. But the reason it's controversial is it turns out the FBI may have been paying them all along to do this. And that would make them employees of the federal government, and it would suddenly make that an illegal search. Oh. And in any event, that's another reason why you may be careful about what you do with your hard drive is the techs will look at it. I remember talking to a guy who worked in an auto repair shop. He said, we routinely, when we get an auto in and, you know, we look at the keychain and see if there's a USB key on it. And if there's any music on there, we'll just take that music. So if you're giving somebody a hard drive with stuff on it, it would be prudent to assume, first of all, they may look at it and take what's on there. And second of all, they may get wiped. So make sure you don't give it to them unless you have a backup.
But you said something about being able to get your programs back because this was an expensive program that was lost.
Well, it just depends on the company. Some companies, if you have a serial number, you just download it and reinstall. More and more, you know, we don't buy disks. We just install it from the internet. And the way you activate it is with a serial number. What was the program?
I was looking on your website. I couldn't figure out which one it was. I even put in a little...
Oh, you mean to get it back?
Yeah, to get it back.
Well... This may or may not work. Depends what the guy did. But the program I was talking about is Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A. It's free from a website called Piriform, P-I-R-I-F-O-R-M. And they make a CC cleaner. They make some paid stuff, but Recuva they offer for free. It's a Windows recovery tool that will recover erased files. It'll even work if the disk's been formatted, but it really kind of depends on how the tech did it.
Oh.
So it's certainly worth a try.
Yeah.
Absolutely worth a try. And I gather you're her tech support.
No, I just happened to hear your program.
Oh, okay.
I was sitting right next to the person, and I thought, you know, that's a great idea, but I didn't get it all down. I thought, well,
there you go.
Look it up online.
And remember, it's at techguylabs.com, but Recuva, and it's sometimes hard to find, so I understand. R-E-C-U-V-A, it's a good program. Everybody should have a copy of that. And then, as long as you're helping your friend, tell her to back up.
Yeah.
That's you got to have a backup.
When you back up with something, and I know it's a silly question to ask, because I'm sure that Carbonite has everything down pat.
Does not back up applications. Most backup programs don't, so that's why you got to back up more than there's. I'll tell you what, we're gonna take a break and I'll explain it all. You can listen on the air when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. So we were talking about backup with Gloria because Gloria's friend brought her computer in for repair and the drive was erased. But that often happens. You should be aware of that and always make a backup first. There is one kind of backup you can do that will get everything back, including your apps, your setup, the icons on your desktop, and everything else, and that's an image backup. And so it's certainly one of the kinds of backups you should do. A backup strategy involves a number of things, including an image backup. The image backup it's kind of like a freeze-dried copy of your hard drive of everything. It doesn't even care about or think about files or data or the difference between applications and data. It doesn't care. All it does is it copies sector by sector, each sector of the hard drive in order, puts it in a file, and then you use that same software to blast that image back on, and your hard drive is exactly bit by bit, bit for bit, identical to the way it was before it was erased. That's what you should do before you bring a computer in, unless the reason you're bringing the computer in is because you have malware on it or something's on the hard drive you don't want. You know, you're having problems because of that. And that's, by the way, a lot of times other repair people will blast the hard drive clean. They want to make sure that nothing you're running, none of the software you're running is the problem. So they put a clean version of Windows on it and test it. Then they can separate software from hardware problems. A lot of different companies make image backups, Drive Imager, Drive Snapshot. Acronis makes a true image program that's a commercial. You don't have to pay for it, but there are some that are shareware or less expensive. I like Drive Snapshot from drivesnapshot.de because you can be running Windows when you make the snapshot. That makes it a lot easier. Microsoft even has its own image system that you can use. It's a little weird because it's labeled as for Windows 7, even if you're on Windows 10. And you get to it, if you just hit the Windows key and type backup, you'll see you can make an image backup of your hard drive as well. But you need to make it on a second external drive, or it could be internal, I guess, but just a second separate drive that you can then access and restore from. Lots of ways to do it. Lots of ways to do it, but I do recommend that. And that's in addition to anything else you're doing for backup. Backup is you know, kind of the solution for a myriad of problems. Tim in Massachusetts, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Leo. A perfect segue into my topic here.
Oh, good.
I just wanted to say I've been listening to you for about 3 years now. I know you go a little bit further back than that, but, man, I really feel as though we've known each other for 25 nice. Years in those 3 years.
That's really nice. Thank you.
Yeah, and we kind of share the same backgrounds. I'm a former broadcaster. I worked in the 70s and mostly kilowatt daytimers, 5,000-watt stations, things like that. And you bring back a lot of memories for that as well, too.
I never reformed. That was my problem. You had the sense to get out. I couldn't.
I grew up in the Magna Quarter, Spotmaster.
Oh, yeah. We called them carts. You slammed them into the drive and you play. Oh, man, those are the days.
That's right. And you had to stand 10 feet back when the Magna Quarters would go into rewind because you didn't know for the
disintegrate
or something. Hey, listen, I took your advice and I made an investment in Synology and I have been really took the thing hook, line, and sinker, and I'm really impressed. I didn't really feel how inferior my current NAS system was until I got the dashboard of DisStation.
You know, it's funny because I was the same way. Everybody around me, you know, has been saying for years, oh, Synology. And I said, yeah. And I had other NASs and other solutions, and I finally just – it's expensive because you have to buy the enclosure. It's about, you know, $500 depending which one you get, and then you have to put drives in it, another $500. You're spending as much as you would for a computer by the end of it. But, boy, what you can do with it makes it, in my opinion, very worthwhile, not just for backup but for serving media files. I use it to replace Evernote. It's a note-taking solution for me. I use it for – synchronizing drives. In other words, a Dropbox replacement. It was well worth it. I'm not saving money in all likelihood, but the convenience and the security of it make me very happy. So I'm glad to hear it's working for you.
Yeah, and it seems like the drop in the money is we're just getting started there. So
oh man, I know.
I'm prescribing to the 3-2-1 approach as well too.
Good.
I bought a second unit to put up at my daughter's about an hour away, and got those synced up together right
Boy,
now.
You do that despite the expense, and you are paying. It is the most expensive way to do this, but you have absolute confidence that everything's safe and secure too, because it's HTTPS, it's encrypted. They've really done a good job with it, I think.
Yeah. So my question is, I have some legacy NASs, a couple of Xylals, NSA 220s, and I've got another box, iMation. Actually made a NAS at one point. And I'm having some, it's all attributed to laziness. I want to be able to find a way that I can mount those drives from the Synology and move all the content over without really ripping them open and reading the drives and things like that. And so far, and this might be for your chat room,
okay,
the only way I can mount a drive in there is either a Samba mount or an SMB mount. And there's no R-Sync or anything like that, and I dread doing a file-by-file through a PC.
Well, you should also investigate. You know, the Synologies, at least the ones I've been using, have external connectors, USB and eSATA, that you, if you had an external connector on those other NASs that you could hook up, you could actually do drive-to-drive copies.
Yeah. That means I got to get out of my chair now.
Yeah, you got to get the right cable. You got to check the thing on the back. But the nice thing about the Synology is you can get a command line. And if you can get a command line, then you can see the other NAS and you can just copy it.
Yeah. But that was the main purpose of my call. I wanted to thank you very much. And I'm probably going to go for a third unit. One last thing.
Synology ought to thank me. That's who ought to thank me.
I picked up the 916 with 8 gig of memory. And,
nice.
You know, it supports virtualization, VirtualBox, so I can load several instances of Windows and sort of do a little bit of sandboxing there. And it really, really does work nice and performs well. And again, I thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm glad you like it. Thanks for calling.
Right. Take care.
All right. I don't know what you say when you say goodbye to a DJ. You say 10-4. So when it's ham radio operators, you say 7-3. That's, you know, your sign of respect. But I don't know what you radio guys say to each other. I'll have to think about that. Carrie's in Hesperia, California. Our next call. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I'm calling because my Sprint 2-year lease is finally up, and I'm trying to decide if I should.
Free at last! Yeah. Free at last!
Well, I can pay it at, like, I think it's about $200 and keep my iPhone 6.
Oh, that's
or
good.
I can continue paying $25 a month for the rest of my life. Upgrade to the latest phone for $25 a month. And I don't
Here's
know.
What I... You have a 6 or 6S?
6.
6. So it's 2 years old already.
Yes.
And, you know, the iPhone 7's pretty nice, although my mom also has a 6. I think she might have a 6S. And she said, well, let me see your iPhone 7. I might want to upgrade. And then she said, well, wait a minute. There's no headphone jack. And,
yeah.
And I said, yeah, they took that out. She said, well, I'm not going to buy that. Why would I want to do that? Marcus Brownlee, who's a great YouTube gadget reviewer, especially phone reviewer, MKBHD, said, all I wanted for 2016 was bigger batteries. All I got was no headphone jack. It seems the companies don't understand what we're really looking for. So are you asking whether you should upgrade?
Well, we were thinking of either. I think we're kind of leaning towards paying whatever it is to keep the phone and waiting till the anniversary phone.
That's exactly what I would do. That would be my advice.
Okay.
The 6 is fine. By the way, the next iPhone, and we don't know if Apple will call it the anniversary phone. It will be, you know, I guess the 10th anniversary of the iPhone, and they've done a new phone every year, so it'll be the 10th iPhone. But I don't know. Remember, everything you read at this point is rank speculation and rumor. And you might say, well, it's got to be credible. People are seeing, you know, demos and models and so forth. But I would just remind you that Apple makes a broad range of models before it decides exactly what it's going to sell you. So because somebody's seen a prototype for an all-glass phone, for instance, or a wireless charging phone or whatever, doesn't mean Apple will sell that. We've seen many times that Apple doesn't. They change their mind or they can't manufacture en masse. Remember, any phone Apple makes, they've got to be prepared to sell hundreds of millions of them. For instance, one strong rumor, which would be a great thing, is that Apple will finally go to the OLED, the OLED screens. Everybody else is using OLED screens now in the Android world. But the problem with that is it's going to be hard for them to get OLED screens in the quantity they need. So they may want to. Maybe they'll have a special, you know, high-end version that'll be hard to get that has OLED. I can pretty much guarantee you, you're never seeing a headphone jack in another iPhone. So if you like the headphone jack, you might want to keep your 6 for a long time.
Yeah, I really appreciate my headphone jack.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you can get around it. They have an adapter and they have special headphones with a lightning port, but you can't charge and use the headphones. And for me, that's a problem in an airplane, for instance. I don't know. I miss the headphone jack. Maybe not. I mean, it's not the end of the world, but if you like your six, I don't think your six is out of date. I guess that's the bottom line.
Okay.
And nothing's happened yet that will make it obsolete. You're welcome. Enjoy your phone. You own it now outright. It's like buying your house. You can burn the mortgage on your phone. Enjoy. Yeah, we don't know. It's just anybody who says that the next iPhone will be this or that doesn't know is just speculating. And I'm certainly willing to speculate, but I would give you the warning that anything I say or anybody else says it might not come true. We don't even know when they're going to release it or announce it. Probably in September. That's how they've done it the last few years. But the first iPhone was announced in January and shipped in June. I mean, there's no guarantee, and Apple's not saying. That's the point. Apple's not saying. I would guess it'll be an exciting phone. But we are also at the point now where it's hard to come up with something that improves it dramatically. That's the other reason why you might just stick, if you've got a 6 or a 6S, you're pretty current. There's nothing dramatic, a dramatic improvement in the next phone. Brett, Woodbridge, New Jersey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Leo. My question is, I have an Android tablet, and I'd like to know how to get the Amazon Video app to work with the Chromecast.
There's a couple of things you can do. If it doesn't work out of the box with Chromecast, there's no Chromecast button on the Amazon Video app. I haven't checked. I should check.
But no, there isn't.
There isn't. All right. So that normally what happens with Chromecast is this really great device that Google sells. It's $35. There's a new one that's the Chromecast Ultra that does 4K. It's, I think, $50. It plugs into the HDMI port on your TV. You do need to give it power, a little USB power. Many TVs have a USB port on them, so you can just have the TV powered. And then you connect to it from a device, Android or iPhone, and you can say, like, say you're running Netflix, you can say, put that on my TV. You cast it to the TV. You can, at that point, turn off the phone because the Chromecast is taking over and is getting the data from the internet and streaming it. If an application doesn't support it, it doesn't have a Chromecast button, then you can't – that puts you in a kind of a weird position. And I'm not sure why Amazon doesn't accept that. Well, Amazon's been acting kind of anti-competitively lately. And remember, they make their own Fire Stick, a Chromecast competitor, and Fire TV. And I guess they don't want you to, they don't want to support a competitor, the Chromecast.
But is there a workaround around this?
Well, there are Chromecast apps that will allow you to Chromecast the content, the screen of the phone. I don't know if actually, I should check to see if he's still making it because a guy named Koosh used to make these, or Koosh, but I think that he might have stopped it. Google kind of doesn't approve of,
which is a good paid one.
Well, it's called Mirror. I don't know if he's still selling it, or Aircast. There's one called Aircast. Maybe that's, is it Mirror or Aircast? I think he's done both. And the idea would be you would mirror your phone. Mike's saying that the Chromecast app, is that from Google, Mike? The Chromecast app will also mirror your phone. All right, maybe you don't need Koshes. So what you do is you'd go to Amazon TV, you'd start the movie playing, and then you'd use the Chromecast app to send the screen of your phone. It's not as good, to be honest. But that's one way to do it. That's called mirroring as opposed to Chromecast, and it does use the Chromecast technology. I have to think it's anti-competitive from Amazon. Same reason they don't sell Apple TVs on Amazon. They don't want to help the competitor out, and that just hurts the consumer. And I think it's puzzling to me. In fact, I've even talked to Amazon employees who've said the same thing. Because after all, Amazon makes its money by you subscribing to Amazon movies and buying Amazon movies, subscribing to Amazon Prime. That's a moneymaker for them. Is it really that important that they block the competitors? Are they really is the Fire TV Stick a strategically important product for Amazon? I wouldn't think so, but hey, it's Jeff Bezos' company. Hey, speaking of Jeff Bezos, the guy who runs Amazon, have you seen the rumors lately that both Jeff Bezos, he also owns the Washington Post, and Mark Zuckerberg, the founder and chairman and president and CEO of Facebook, have both looked at politics in the U.S. and are both considering a run for presidency in 2020. The joke is that both of them are saying, if I had known it was that easy to buy my way to the presidency, I would have done it. I mean, after all, they control massive media platforms, Mark Zuckerberg especially. Interesting rumor. I don't know how true it is, but it rings true. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, celebrating on this day in 1968. What does that make it? 49 years ago. Almost 50. Next year's will be the 50th anniversary of the birth of video games. At least home video games. And on January 15th, 1968, Ralph Baer, this is from This Day in TechHistory.com, generally considered the father of the video game industry, applies for a patent on a TV game system he designed. The patent eventually leads to the Magnavox Odyssey. You remember that? The first home video game machine. So home video games began on this day in 1968. 49 years ago. Wow. Richard, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm having problems watching you through Roku. You keep getting interrupted by reloading or something.
I hate it when that happens.
Any solutions?
So the Roku app was written by Craig Mullaney, great programmer. He's in our chat room from time to time, Houdini7. And it uses one of the many streams that we stream to.
Two.
Yeah. Well, it used to have three, but Big Gravity threw us off. So I think it's Ustream, and I'm not sure what the other one was, Flowsoft perhaps. So the deal on that is you, of course, have to have enough bandwidth to watch it. You used to be able to watch it without buffering.
No, it buffered, but not nearly as often as it has been recently.
And maybe that Bit Gravity was more reliable now that we've lost Bit Gravity. What are you watching right now?
I don't know.
I think it has a BitTorrent solution. Somebody's telling me that they're
going. It's a Ustream, and it's a Flow something.
Flowsoft and Ustream, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, you can always try the other server, but sometimes also you have to have enough bandwidth, obviously, to keep up with the stream. One thing you might try on Roku, there's a YouTube app on Roku.
Right.
And we are now on YouTube Live. So if you go to youtube.com/twit, you can stream live from there. You might see for sure YouTube is not going to buffer unless you don't have enough bandwidth. And it really is going to come down to the bandwidth that you've got.
Well, one thing that I do, I also have the stick that you mentioned, or the Fire, the Amazon Fire thing. I use their ESPN link, and I was watching a full basketball game yesterday
without any interruptions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It's not probably your bandwidth. It's probably the server you're getting it from. It may even be the Roku, it doesn't have enough power. I don't really know. But there's also a Twitch app, and we're on Twitch. Is the Twitch stream back, John? I'm not sure. No. All right. So for future reference, there's a Twitch app as well. And I think what you're looking for is a streaming service that will adjust to your bandwidth so that it will give you a stream that doesn't buffer with as high a quality as it can, given your speed capabilities. And it may be that Ustream is not doing that very well. So try a different server, see if they do all right. The quality may go down a little bit, but then at least you don't have to, get interrupted. I don't have to get interrupted every time.
I think I'm going to try the YouTube. That's a good idea.
Yeah, give it a shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you watch. Thank you.
Every weekend.
I appreciate it.
Thanks.
I'm waving.
Take care.
Yeah, we stream a video of a lot of the stuff we do, and it's not, a moneymaker for us. We don't have a way of really charging for it. So we do it just kind of, it's fun. I like the idea of you being able to watch live when you're watching the radio show. You're watching the behind the scenes of the radio show. If you watch it other times, you're watching the behind the scenes of podcasts as we make podcasts, and we do podcasts all week long. Twit.tv, you can stream from our website as well. And really the whole point for me is just, the interactivity of a live audience allows, right? So we have a chat room. You can get in there and chat with us, and that wouldn't make any sense unless you could watch live. No point in chatting on a podcast that was recorded yesterday. So I like doing the live. It's my original thought when we started doing this almost 10 years ago was that the future of television was internet-based, right? We called it IPTV, Internet Protocol Television. That has not really taken off to the degree I thought it would. On the other hand, it's getting there, right? How much of the stuff you watch on TV do you watch through the air? How much do you watch over a cable? And how much do you watch over the internet, which is also over the same cable? And I would guess that the percentage of internet content is going up while the other two are going down. That's kind of exciting. Last call of the day comes from Kentucky. Alan, thank you for your patience. What can I do for you?
Not a problem. Thank you for taking my call today, Leo. I'll get right to it since we're running short on time.
Sure.
Here.
Thank you.
I've got a problem with networking in my home. I can't seem to get any connectivity on the 2.4 gigahertz band. I've tried two different routers. I've tried...
it's not, so there are two Wi-Fi bands, 2.4 and 5. You obviously know that because you mentioned 2.4. 2.4 is unfortunately pretty cluttered. Do you see neighbors' Wi-Fi?
So I do see neighbors' Wi-Fi, but here's the interesting thing. My problem connecting to 2.4 didn't start until my neighborhood started having power surges.
Oh, interesting.
So...
Could be the power surges can fry delicate electronics.
Exactly. But in both cases, 5 has worked fine.
Well, it's a different transmitter, I would guess, a different radio. It could be that your 2.4 got fried. I was going to say it's not uncommon to have problems with 2.4 in general, just because there's so much stuff going on. Not only your neighbors, but your microwave oven, sometimes your phone. 2.4 is a very crowded spectrum. That's why same thing in my house. I can't use 2.4. So I always, if you use one of the reasons these new mesh routers work so well is they'll auto switch you to a different band, the 5 gigahertz band, if it gets crowded, without your knowledge or intervention. And that, for a lot of people, even that is all it takes to get a better connection. Since you say, if it's not just a coincidence that this happened with the power surge, I would guess that the power surge fried some, but not all, of your router.
On two different routers, though?
That does seem unlikely. But if one went down, maybe your 2.4 wouldn't be as good in general, that kind of thing. I think routers are surprisingly vulnerable. In fact, they even wear out. You would think, there's nothing to wear out. There's no moving parts. But after 4 years, it's probably time to get a new router anyway.
Right. In this case, I had one hooked up, started having the problem, hooked up a different one, and the same problem is happening again after.
Yeah, you got me. You got me.
Yeah.
Try different locations. RF, radio frequency, which is what we're talking about here, is a black art. Even the radio station engineers, the gurus of radio frequency, often resort to trial and error to solve a problem because it's become a black art because it isn't fully predictable. So I don't have a quick answer. Maybe the website will have one. Please go there, techguylabs.com. Your comments are welcome, and I'll be back next time. I hope you will too. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.